We have just finished the 13th chapter last week, which talked about the field and the knower of the field, talked about Prakriti and Purush, matter and spirit, and the inert and the conscious. And it talked about the world and the Lord, and some concepts and some methods were given how we can reach that divine goal. So I thought today, instead of continuing the Bhagavad Gita, I would like to spend today's class talking about sadhana, or what is spiritual practice, because we all are looking for a guidebook or a manual, or they say, give us a step-by-step techniques of how I can progress spiritually, because we are all on the spiritual path. And so I try to combine ideas that I have accumulated from the Gita, from Vivek Chudamani, and from Sadhana Panchakam, Shankaracharya's very short book of 5 verses, which gives us the techniques of sadhana. So there is a lot of writing on the boards. So we'll start with this one today. And at the top, we have written sadhana, sadhaka, sadhan, and sadhya. So these are 4 Sanskrit words. So sadhana means the spiritual practice. And, you know, meeting here is another one of those spiritual practices called satsang, where we meet to study the truth. So we are sadhakas, we are spiritual seekers, and that's why we are on the spiritual path. That's why we study the Bhagavad Gita, that's why we meditate, you know, we pray, go to church or temple. And then sadhan is the means, how should I carry out my spiritual practice? And the last one is called sadhya, or the goal. And what is the goal? The scriptures tell us that the goal is self-realization, or God-realization, or becoming one with the Lord that is within and that is without. The Advaita, where seeing the oneness, becoming one, seeing not only intellectually or visually, but experiencing that oneness. And that is the goal, and that can only happen when I become one with the Lord within, where I experience my oneness. So that is the goal. Now in the Vivek Chudamani, which we have actually just started, those who would like to join the Wednesday study group actually will be starting in about 4 weeks. It's a masterful text which talks about the entire gamut of spiritual sadhana. It's Wednesdays 8 to 9. We'll be starting in about 4 weeks. But right in the beginning, Bhagavan Shankaracharya, the author, tells us, the Lord tells us that narjanma, human birth, is very rare. Because if you say, oh, there are 7 billion people on this earth, what do you mean it's very rare, overpopulated? But actually, if you look at it among the total creation, say you count all the species of plants and viruses and bacteria and animals and birds and fish and all the little mosquitoes and all that, when you count the total number, human beings are less than 1%. Actually, they say between 0.5 and 1% of all creation is human. So 99.5% of creation is non-human. So we are a very small minority of God's, only on this earth. Forget about other planets and other, you know. So human birth is extremely rare. So we are fortunate. Among the humans, Swami Chinmayananda says that a lot of us are just 2-legged animals. The only difference between us and animals, he says, check behind and see if you have a tail or if you have horns. Then if you don't, then you are a human. But how many of us really have Purushatvam or Manushyatvam? And that, they say, are the humane qualities. You may be a human bodily, you may have the human structure. Why? Because you were born from a human mother. Okay, so that. But then do you have the qualities of concern for others? Love, compassion, kindness, sharing, the intellectual desire to know, the desire to go beyond what is perceived in this world. Is there something different? Is there something higher? How can I better myself? How can I get lasting happiness, not this temporary happiness? So how many of us have the emotional qualities of humanity and the intellectual qualities of intelligence, of wanting to evolve beyond what everybody else is doing. Everybody else is just living, procreating, dying. Animals also do that. Birds also do that. Build a house, build a, nest egg, and then you're dead. So what, is that all my purpose of life? So very few people out of the population of Bakersfield, how many are, listening to the Bhagavad Gita or anything, for that matter. Then rarer than that, you may have some knowledge, maybe you have done a PhD in Sanskrit or you have done some philosophy courses, and so you have studied it, but do you have the mumukshutvam, the intense desire for liberation? I do not want to be any more a slave to my body, my mind, my intellect, my bodily needs of, living, acquiring, possessing. My emotional needs of, getting more love and more, it's okay. And then intellectual success and knowledge and reading and all. I've done enough of that. I want to be liberated. I want to go beyond this, Shankaracharya calls the home. He says, do not be attached to your home. This home of this body was very comfortable to us as long as we were animals. Up to from protozoa to animals, yes. I am this body, but then I have to get out of this home to a higher realm of the spirit, and that is called mumukshutvam, and very few people have that. And maybe some of us may have a mild desire for liberation, and that is good. At least you desire, but an intense desire, which not too many people have, maybe Shankaracharya ji had, maybe Buddha had, when even having everything, he still could leave. But at least we need to develop some kind of mumukshutvam, some kind of. And then the most important, Shankaracharya ji says, is Mahapurusha Samshrayaha, taking refuge under men of wisdom. Men of wisdom, by taking refuge, it means that a man of wisdom comes into your life whom you respect and you admire, and then you tune your mind to that wise person. And refuge does not mean, getting physically attached. There are some people, when Swamiji's come, they get so physically attached. I remember there was a lady in this camp in Piercy where we go, and she was so attached physically to Guruji's form that she would spend hours outside his window, just staring at his window, even when he was asleep. And she would be up till midnight, 1 o'clock. And that is not devotion to the guru. That is an obsession where you are just staying up all. True attachment or seeking refuge in the guru is to listen to the words of the guru, apply them into your life and make a change. So that is called taking shelter under the wise person. And that can only happen by the grace of God. These three. All these four things. You say, even the fact that we are all here studying this is also the grace of God. You'll say, what grace of God? I took my car and drove here. What does God have to do with it? No, the divine grace is very necessary even for the desire to know spirituality, to study. The Lord must have blessed us. So they say, well, why did the God bless us? Why doesn't he bless everybody else? Why is he playing favorites? I've given this example many times. God's grace is everywhere. But those whose minds are purified and subtle only can receive the grace, just as electricity is everywhere. But a bulb which is clean and shiny and bright, when that is connected, that illumines the room beautifully. But there may be another bulb which is very dirty and very muddy and covered and all black. Now the electricity may be passing through it, but it won't illumine the room. So we have to purify our mind, reduce our selfish vasanas, and then with a pure mind that is ready for knowledge, you have to have the thirst for knowledge, then only the grace of God will shine through. And Swami Chinmayananda gives a very beautiful story, which is a little long, but it's worth repeating. He says that do not waste this opportunity. You have all three. You have human birth. You have some humane qualities. You have some desire for liberation. And we have got a wise person, Swami Chinmayananda, as our guru, and all the other acharyas who come, Swami Ishwarananda ji and Bodhatmananda ji and all. So we have that, but let us not waste, and let us recognize the value of this, those three things that we have, one, two, and three. So there's a very beautiful story. They said there was this American who was an antiques dealer, who was a specialist in antique brass and all that. And so he said he decided to go to India to look for some very antique, things, because he was looking for 17th century brass. I don't know why he was interested in that. And he said that has a great market. So he had heard that in some parts of India, there were some houses that were actually 300 years old. You know, in India, they build houses to last a long time, not plywood homes that only last 4 years. So they make them out of cement and steel. And also this particular area had never been hit by earthquakes, had not had any wars. And he said, in that area, I need to find some 300-year-old brass, if I can find something outside a museum. Because museums, they won't sell it, and it's very expensive. And he wanted to come and sell it in the U.S. So he found a local guide, a dealer, and he said, come on, you go with me. I'll pay you a commission. And so they were walking through that neighborhood and a lot of old homes. And he comes to one house where there is an open courtyard. And there is the tulsi plant, it's the tulsi basil plant, which is used for worship. We use that in puja, it's considered holy. So there was this plant that was worshipped every day, and then people would take a few leaves and offer it to God for prayers. And there was this lamp that was lying solid, made of solid brass. And for 300 years, it had been in the family, for generations. And they used to use that. They would light a lamp to pray to that tulsi plant. And then after some time, the kids would come and play with it and throw it here and there. And, then the grandmother would go collect it, clean it. You shouldn't be throwing it. You shouldn't play with it. And so over the centuries, it had passed. So this dealer was walking by and he suddenly said, what is that lamp? So that local agent said, it's nothing. It's just a lamp. It's not worth anything. It's all covered with mud and all. He says, no, bring it. I want to see it. So he looks at it. He rubs off the dirt and polish. Then he examines. He says, this is very rare. It's 300-year-old brass and it is very valuable. So the agent says, how much you think? So the man calculates. He knew he could sell it for $10,000 in the U.S. He says, tell the owner I'll give him $1,000. And the dealer was shocked, the local agent, because he was expecting maybe $2 or $3, 100 rupees or 200 rupees, 1,000. He was shocked. He was stunned. He couldn't even think. So the American thinks maybe it's not enough. He says, okay, maximum $2,000, not going to give a penny more than $2,000. And this guy's, floored, because that much more commission he's going to get. And so he goes, and so there's a little boy running around. So he asks him in vernaculum, so where's your father? He said, my father is not here, but my grandfather has gone to the field. So he says, go bring him. He says, why? He says, this man, he wants to buy this lamp for a lakh of rupees, more than lakh rupees, because it's, 100,000 rupees. And so he said, really? He said, okay. So then the boy goes to the back and kind of walks around and does something and comes back. And after 5 minutes, he said, hurry up, go bring your grandfather. He said, okay. He goes and brings his grandfather. So grandfather comes. He says, yes, sir, what can I do for you? So the dealer tells, this man wants to give you a lakh of rupees. He said, lakh of rupees? Why? Does he want to buy this house and land, both? I'll sell it to him. He says, no. He doesn't want to buy the house and land. He just wants to give you $2,000 just for this lamp. He said, where is the lamp? He says, the one that you always, offer to the tulsi plant. He said, where is it? The grandfather himself had not looked at that lamp in three years. And suddenly he's all excited. and he can't see it. So he said, where did it go? So he asked the boy, where is that lamp? Boy says, you know, it's inside. He said, what do you mean inside? He says, it's inside. So he takes him inside. The boy has taken the lamp, wrapped it in a cloth, then wrapped the cloth in a box, then put the box in a trunk, then locked the trunk with a key, and then hid the key somewhere under the carpet. He said, why did you do all that? You know, he says, grandfather, you don't know. This lamp is worth 100,000 rupees. Now that lamp that he was kicking around and throwing everywhere, now suddenly when somebody appreciated the value, then he said, oh, really, this is valuable? So he went and hid it and preserved it so that now he knows it's not a 100 rupee or 200 rupees lamp, it's 100,000 rupees. And so he preserved it carefully and he gave it to that American who happily took it and sold it for a lot more money in the US. But the moral of the story is that we don't realize the value of what we have. See, we just take our human life for granted. You know, we just kick it around here and there, just wasting our life in useless pursuits and parties and drinking and shopping and, you know, unnecessarily just gossiping and wasting our time. And they say that utilize this beautiful opportunity, preserve it carefully. Once you have understood the value, once we have a Mahatma like Shankaracharya telling us that human life is very rare and these other qualities, if you have, do not lose the opportunity. When Mahatmas come, wise people come to this center, take advantage of that opportunity, meet with them. Whatever little I know from, you know, is just by meeting all these Mahatmas, by listening to them, by studying them. We have so many beautiful books in the office and videos and CDs. So take advantage of this opportunity because it is very rare to have that. And once you have it, don't waste it because human life is limited. You know, we don't know how long we'll live. Maybe another 5 years, 10 years, 20 years. Majority of us have finished most of our life. You know, 2/3 or half of our life is over if you consider normal life expectancy. So urgency is there. Have an urgency that I need to reach my goal and I need to reach it quickly in this life itself. Let us not waste this. It's a very beautiful story, really touched me. So I thought I would repeat that to all of you. So now having, at least hopefully we are convinced what is our goal, if we can just turn the page, please. What are the sadhanas I should do? What are the spiritual practices? So Shankaracharyaji and then Prabodhji Swami Bodhatmanandaji, who will be coming next week, he divides them into Bahirang Sadhana and Antarang Sadhana. So we'll talk about the Bahirang. Bahirang Sadhana means the external practices that I should do and what I should do internally, because we need to do both. You need to change your life outside and you need to change your life inside. So I need to do both to evolve spiritually. So what is the Bahirang Sadhana? There are a lot of them. I don't have that much time to cover them in detail, but we'll just go over briefly as these, and then if we have questions, we can always discuss. And they do come up as we study the Bhagavad Gita. These things will be coming up, especially in the next 14th chapter. We'll be doing the gunas, the sattva, rajas, and tamas, and a lot of these Bahirang sadhanas will come in that, and then also the internal sadhanas. Before we proceed, what I have covered so far, does anybody have any questions or any comments about human life and birth and what are the... Yes.
What do you think is a good reminder why we're here? Because if we have the knowledge, you don't really think about it. It's just we're here to have fun.
Right, absolutely. Like you're just kicking our body around like that lamb.
Right.
Yes. Okay, thank you. So the Bahirang Sadhana, the external and then the internal one, to me, the internal one, I think, is more important. Actually, they are both important. Unless you change outside, the internal change is more difficult. It's more subtle. These ones are more obvious, easier to do. I find that this is kind of the preliminary. This is the primary school, and then this is the high school. So perform spiritual duties. Spiritual duties, we all know. If you don't know, you know, the scriptures tell us, you know, whether it's the Gita or the Bible or the Quran or the Guru Granth Sahib, they all tell us what one should do, the Ten Commandments, the, you know, the values of the Bhagavad Gita, the eight principles of Buddhism. So we all know that, you know, what we should do, what I should not do. So it says that Vedo Nityam Adhiyatam, Shankaracharya ji says, read the Vedas, read the scriptures every day. Tatudidam Karma Anushtishtatam. So perform the spiritual duties every day. Whatever the scriptures have told you, perform them to the best of your ability, perform them to the letter T. So do what you are supposed to do and avoid what you are supposed to avoid. And while I am doing the duties, do not get arrogance that I am more spiritual than the others, I am better than you, but dedicate them to as a service to the Lord, not to show off or not to brag, but that whatever duties I am doing it as a service of the Lord, constantly remembering the Lord, taking, and even at your work, whatever work you are doing, whether you are seeing patients or dealing with your students or with your children or at home or with the family, every work that you do, dedicated to the Lord, and develop an attitude of love for Lord. Love for others is called love, but love for the Lord is called devotion. So have a relationship with God, as we have talked many times. You can have a relationship of a loving master or my father in heaven or mother. You know, if you worship the mother goddess, you can worship God as the mother. Some people worship God as a friend, as a child, or even as a beloved, you know, like Mirabai, or like the nuns. They say, I'm married to Christ. So you can love God as a beloved. A lot of people love God as a child, you know, baby Jesus or baby Ganpati or baby Krishna. And some people worship God as a friend. Oh, he's my friend. He'll always take care of me. Or father in heaven or mother. And constantly remember the Lord as often as you can. Take every opportunity to be grateful to God and to be. Because the attitude of gratitude, when you bring it into your life, you'll find that your heart immediately becomes very cheerful. The moment you express gratitude, especially to God, you will find that instantly your heart will be filled with love and filled with, you know, happiness, filled with joy. And so start your day by remembering the Lord, end your day by remembering the Lord. Remember with love and devotion, not with fear. God is not someone to be feared. People say, well, if I don't fear God, then I will be committing all sins. No. What you have to fear is your karmas. Because the law of karma is absolute. It's not God who punishes or anybody else, but it is my own actions that either punish me or bless me. So what I have to fear is the law of karma. And that's why once you do that, then automatically your actions will be good. And also when you remember the Lord with love in your heart, then automatically your heart will become pure. Because they say, Swami Chinmayananda says, turn your heart in devotion to the Lord. He will purify it and give it back to you. So turn your mind in love to God and your heart will automatically become purified. Then your actions automatically will be pure. Then they say, renounce desires. They say, well, if I don't desire, then I won't work. No, the work will come, especially when you dedicate your work to the Lord, then your work actually will become more efficient, more inclusive. You know, it won't be exclusive only for this person or that. It will be all inclusive. Your work will become more pure. Your heart will be filled with love and compassion. So take the Lord and slowly reduce your desires, because it is our desires that cultivate vasanas. The more selfish desires I have, for me and my, I and my, the more I strengthen my negative vasanas. And the more I do that, the further away I go from the truth. So as you reduce your desires and you purify and simplify your life. What do we mean by purify? Purify again means remove the negativities. In our heart, we have a lot of negativities like anger, greed, jealousy, hatred, arrogance. Slowly reduce them and substitute love, compassion, kindness. So unless you purify your heart, spiritual progress is impossible. You may be able to chant the entire, you know, Vishnu Sahasranama, and you may have read the Brahma Sutras, and you may be even be able to give talks like I am doing. But if your heart is not pure, if your heart is does not have love and compassion for all, it's all wasted. Then you might as some one place, there's a great saint who says it is like an elephant's bath, you know. Studying the scriptures without purifying your heart is like the elephant's bath. Now, what happens when an elephant takes bath? You know, he it's very interesting. He'll go take a bath in the river and use his trunk and wash himself very nicely. And then he'll come out and pick up mud and put it on his body again. They say, why did you take a bath if you were going to put dirt on? I guess they say the dirt protects him from insects. But the point is that taking an elephant's bath is wasted, you know, as far as we are concerned. So similarly, spiritual studies without purification of the mind is a waste. It's like an elephant's bath. It said that very beautifully in Mukundmala. So have purify your mind and then simplify your life. Reduce your possessions. If you have clothes that you have not worn, give them away. You know, avoid unnecessary buying, you know, extra things that you don't need. If your car is running fine, it's okay. I don't need to change it every 3 years. I don't need the next piece of jewelry or the next outfit or the clothes. Or just, you know, I'm doing fine, but then I just want to go out and get another business and I just want to multiply. And, you know, I mean, yeah, you need to progress, but not to the extent where that becomes your whole goal in life. Money should be my means to for me to live so that I may serve the world and I may evolve spiritually. So in fact, even this human body, it says, sarvartha paropkaryartham, sarva paropkaryartham. He says this human body has been given to you to serve. So use that as a vehicle to serve, simplify your life. And reduce your attachment to sense objects, you know, things that we see, hear, smell, taste, and touch. Slowly develop detachment, slowly develop self-control, because sense objects, Swami Chinmayananda says, are riddled with pain. He said, how can you say riddled with pain? If I go out and eat an ice cream, now that's not riddled with pain, that's beauty. Yeah. Or a cheese pizza. No, the point is that the sense objects, you know, how do they say they're riddled with pain? Because say if I want to acquire it, something not simple, but something I wanted to get and I couldn't get. So I put all the effort to get it. And then once having got it, you know, then I'm worried. You know, I may lose it if it's a person or an object. Or as it gets older, then again I get worried. Or a person, I love somebody, finally I married her. Then after a while, you know, she's, you know, I mean, you're worried. You may lose that person, the emotions are changing. Or if I have a big house and it's mine is bigger than the neighbors, then I get arrogance, I get pride. But then I'm worried somebody may break in, so then I have security and I have a guard and I keep 2-3 bag dogs and all that. So sense objects, when they come, it takes effort to get it. Then it's effort to preserve it. You know, my house is getting old, I have to take care. And then there is effort, fear of losing it. So there may be a temporary joy in the sense objects, but the end result is pain. So start detaching yourself. Withdraw yourself. Do not, you need something, of course, to live. You need a house and a car and clothes and all that. But unnecessarily hoarding. It's called parigraha, where you just collect for no reason. Your closet is full and you still go out and buy 5 pairs and you don't need that. I used to do that a lot, but you know, I'm trying now at least not as much. So detach yourself and sacrifice, give, and you know, share with others. If you have extra, share it. And we all have extra in this country. You know, the Lord has blessed us so much that we are constantly getting blessed by the Lord, you know, with so much, you know, objects, and then beautiful weather and the air and, you know, water. We're not getting so much, but still, you know, compared to many parts of the world, you know, we still have plentiful. And so the Lord has blessed us. It is our duty, because you are accumulating a negative karmic balance. Also, they say, do not take from others. Be a giver, not a taker. Because our tendency is, arre, free mein mil raha hai, le lo. You know, if I'm getting it, it's okay. But as you take from somebody, you are again coming under his debt. Once I take something, it does not mean that you become, oh, I'm not going to go eat in anybody's house and all that. But do not be a taker. In life, constantly try to give, because that is how you pay back your debt to society, especially give to people who can't afford it, people who need help. So be a giver, not a taker, because that is how the Lord, who has given us everything we have, our body, our mind, our intellect, all the world of objects, emotions, and thoughts, we should pay him back, first of all, with gratitude, and secondly, by taking care of people less fortunate than us. So sacrifice, serve, and detach. And then Shankaracharya ji says, worship Om daily. You can say Om, or whether whoever your Ishta Devta is, whoever the Lord you worship, it can be Jesus, it can be Krishna, it can be Shiva, it can be Mother Goddess, Ganpati. But choose a symbol of God. And the reason we choose Om, because Om is one of the symbols that represents God. Also, it is formless. Represents the formless, all-pervading reality. And also, Om was the first sound. Actually, Om, there is so much you can speak on. I can talk for half an hour. Maybe some other time we can schedule a session where I can talk about Om. Om is another beautiful subject. So remember the Lord daily and set aside some time. Of course, while you're driving, you can, you know, chant his name. While you're sitting and waiting, you can chant his name. While cooking, you can say, okay, I'm cooking for the Lord. When I'm doing the dishes, when I'm walking on the treadmill, I try to do that, either chant the mantra or I try to become an observer and a witness. And I'm watching my body walking on the treadmill. So even that treadmill becomes a spiritual activity if you can, you know, make it a meditative activity. But set aside some time for exclusive prayer and meditation, you know, exclusively that this is my time for my spiritual sadhana. So set aside 20 minutes, half an hour out of 24 hours. If you cannot set aside 20 minutes, then, you know, it's not. So some amount of time for prayer and also for silent meditation where I contemplate and go inward. We'll talk about that later on. Use the intellect. God has given us the intellect. Use it wisely and avoid useless arguments, you know, just fighting with people. And especially do not argue with wise people. You know, they say that is the worst thing you can do. Somebody who is wise, a spiritual master who has come, does not mean that you don't discuss, but avoid useless arguments. Use your intelligence. Talking about intelligence, this lady calls her husband. She said, darling, I found this lamp, old lamp, and I rubbed it and out came a genie. And he said, I can have only one wish. So the husband says, well, ask him to increase my intelligence 10 times. So she says, okay, let me ask him. So she, after 2 minutes, comes back on the line. Says, what did he say about increasing my intelligence 10 times? She says, honey, he said 10 times zero is still zero. I'm sure the husbands here will beat me for this. So use your intelligence if you have any. and avoid useless arguments. And as I said even before, give up the idea that I am this body. Because this body, as I said, is an instrument given by me, by the Lord to me to serve. Sarva paropkaryartham. That is the only reason you have this human body and this human intelligence. You do not have, has not been given to acquire, possess, multiply. Even animals do that. Swamiji says it very beautifully. He says, Swamiji, I have 3 children. So Swamiji says, I have a cow who has 4 children. So what? Great. He says, I have a house. She says, yeah, look at the sparrow. She has a better house than you. So he says, I eat. So Swamiji says, my buffalo eats more than you. So what have you done different? If all you have done is eat, drink, and multiply and then die, then you're useless. You've wasted this opportunity. So give up the idea that I am the body. I am that intelligence. I am that supreme divinity. I am that Brahman, that consciousness who has appeared on this earth. The Lord has appeared through me to serve the world. I am here to serve the world and I am here to realize the truth. That is the only purpose for which I am here. This body is my instrument to serve and to realize. Those are the only 2 purposes I have. Of course, I need to earn and have enough for my... Otherwise, if I don't have anything, how am I going to serve and help the world? I need to acquire, but not to overhoard, but to share and to serve. So give up the idea that I am the body. And say, constantly tell yourself, I am Brahman, I am that spirit, I am that consciousness. I am not the body, I am not the body, I am not the body. Don't just mechanically chant it, but bring it into your life. And when things happen to the body, become a witness. We'll talk about that. And that is comes to the pairs of opposites. At the body level, you will have heat and cold, health and good health. At the mental level, you'll have joys and sorrows. One day somebody will love me, one day not. At the intellect, we have talked about many times, you'll have success and failure. One day you'll be very disturbed. One day you'll be peaceful. So, pairs of opposites will come. If you let them take over you, then it will disturb your peace of mind. And as I said, the peace of mind is something that has to be preserved. You cannot let anyone disturb your peace of mind. That is the only wealth you have. You may have all the money in the world. You may have all the food in the world. But if your mind is unhappy, what good is that? You know, you're sitting home miserable. You know, like Howard Hughes, he was sitting in that penthouse, billionaire, and he was so miserable. He was afraid even to eat because he was afraid people will poison him. So you may have the best clothes, the best food, the best... all the money, but if your mind is not at peace, it is worthless. If you are unhappy, if you are miserable. So preserve that peace of mind. Do not let anybody come and take it away and develop fortitude. Because life is not perfect. You know, life will give problems. Kabhi kisi ko mukammal jahan nahi milta. You know, that very famous ghazal in Umrao Jaan. Nobody's life is perfect and life will have. So develop fortitude. And there are 3 ways. I have talked about it many times. That if adversity comes, if you believe in the law of karma, you say, Lord, this is my karmas that are coming. I caused it. Then you don't blame your husband. You don't blame the government. You don't blame Obama. You don't blame anybody. It is my own karmas that caused it. If you believe in the path of devotion, God, you are the doer. And even though problems are here, they are here to for me to improve. Just as gold needs to go through a process to become pure, so I need to go through this, so I cheerfully bear it. So in the path of karma, you say it's my karmas. In the path of devotion, you say, the Lord, you are doing it for my betterment, and I accept it. And in the path of knowledge, you say, I am the spirit. I am not this body. So whatever is happening to the body, to the mind, is not happening to me. Let it happen. It is the prarabdha of the body to suffer, the mind, but I am none of those. It is like somebody, you know, my chair is there and my chair breaks. or my phone breaks. I mean, phone breaks, of course, I'll be very sad. I might go into depression for a week. But say somebody breaks my chair. You know, I won't say I am broken. The chair broke. It's okay. I go buy a new one. But similarly, I should have the attitude to my body that if my body drops, it's okay. I am not the body. Even if I have time, if I have to drop, somebody tells me you have cancer, you'll be gone in 6 months. Okay. So body will be gone. So what? Nothing happens to me. I am that spirit. That kind of attitude when a person has, there is a very famous book. I think everybody should read it. It's a very old book. It's called Death Be Not Proud. And it talks about a young man who was told he has cancer and how beautifully he handles that. I read that book as a teenager. I still had such an impact on me. The movie Anand was made on that, based on that similar theme, how this young man handles cancer. So that should be the attitude of fortitude, that it's okay. You know, whatever happens, it's fine. So what? You know, I dropped this body, so I'm not the body. I just changed my body. I get a new one. I'll get a fresh, brand new one. Spend some time in solitude. That's the most beautiful way to quieten the mind. Go out in nature. You know, go to Hart Park. The river is so peaceful. It's so nice. The trees are so beautiful. You see the ducks on the river or any park. You know, just go and sit with nature. Go to the mountains. Take a drive and just sit there. And you'll find that when you're sitting in front of a lake or a beautiful mountain or even under a tree, the trees are like yogis. You know, they have so much energy, and you sit under them, it's like you feel protected. So spend some time in solitude with nature, and take out some time every day if you can, 15 minutes, 20 minutes, or at least once or twice a week. Just be with yourself, and at that time, don't be thinking too many thoughts, because when you're by yourself, what happens is the mind starts running. Bring the mind to that nature and see the beauty of that river or that lake or that mountain and go within. And when you do that, and then you'll find that that 20 minutes or half an hour will become a beautiful meditative activity. So spend some time with yourself, because we are usually afraid of our thoughts. If we are out with ourselves, either we pick up the phone and call anybody, or nowadays we just pick up the phone and start, you know, just surfing, uselessly reading the news or surfing the net, or, you know, yeah, you need to check your emails and messages, but we have nothing. I find people, you know, waiting in a doctor's office, they're on the phone. They get a minute and they just turn on the phone. This is a terrible addiction. I do that too. I'm equally guilty. So you have to catch yourself. I don't need to be on the phone, because that itself is disturbing your mind. So do one thing at a time. Do not be doing two things. That's another thing Eknath Ishwaran says. Do one thing at a time. Quieten the mind. Because when you multitask, that's when your mind gets agitated. And the last one is, see the Lord everywhere. See God everywhere. See means God is in all of us, but we don't see it. So see God everywhere. Even I won't say that. I won't say brother-in-law. But see the Lord everywhere. Yeah, see Him in all, even in my neighbor, even in my boss, even in my husband. He is everywhere. God is everywhere. So see God everywhere and worship the people as a manifestation of the Lord. Serve everybody. So this is the Bahirang. This is the external sadhana. There's a lot of ideas, and I couldn't go into detail, but I thought at least I can list them, and then we can, you know, think about it. Okay, this is a little more difficult. I don't know how much time we have, but I'll try to do it, because this is the actual ultimate goal of, is to go inward. This is all okay. This is preparatory. This is the high school. So it says, first of all, Shravan, listen. Listen to the words of wise people. And by listening also, it means reading. Vedyo Vedo Nitya Madhiyata. Shankaracharya ji says, the Vedas should be constantly read. Daily should be reading. So daily I must do some reading. And when I have an opportunity to listen to wise people, seek them, and then serve them. You say, why do we need to serve them? You know, why do they need our service? You know, and somebody says, oh, one time Swamiji was, they were bringing food. Oh, he's so lucky, he gets taken care of. See, they have given their whole life to serve us, you know, to come and teach us. You know, they have given up their home, their career, and they come here. So I serve them not because of anything physical, because A, when I touch the feet of a wise person, it is not that I'm becoming low, but the wise person stands on knowledge. See, what does he stand on? His knowledge. So his feet or his sandals represent the knowledge he stands on. So when I bow down and touch the feet of the wise person, I am actually prostrating to the knowledge. Secondly, when you are in the company of wise people, do not be physically attached to them, do not get emotionally attached to them, but connect your intellect with their intellect, because they have so much knowledge. So connect your intellect to them, get their knowledge, and then eventually develop a spiritual connection. So my connection with the wise person should be spiritual, should be intellectual. But when I serve them, when I am in the company of wise people, it is that to see how these people conduct themselves. When you sit and spend time with them, like, or when you drive them, you know, pick them up from LA or drop them to San Jose. So when you are in the company of these wise people, you are blessed with their presence, and you see how they conduct themselves, how they function, so we can learn from them. So that is the idea. Seek the company of wise people and learn from them. Then whatever you have heard, contemplate upon it. The second is mananam. First is shravanam. Second is mananam. Contemplate upon it. Think about it. And think that, is this something that I need, that I can apply, that is useful? And only for first it was Krishna's knowledge. Okay, Bhagavad Gita was given by Krishna to Arjuna. Then by listening and contemplating, it becomes my knowledge. I have understood. Swami Chinmayananda interpreted Krishna's commentary, Krishna's Gita. It is my knowledge. It is now not Chinmayananda's knowledge, but it is my knowledge. I have understood it. And then the third is nididhyasam, or firm abidance. Constantly bring the Bhagavad Gita into your life. Like somebody told Swamiji, I have gone through the Bhagavad Gita 3 times. But Swamiji says, has the Bhagavad Gita gone through you? See, you have read the Bhagavad Gita, but have you brought it into your life? And whatever scriptures, whether you're reading the Bible or the Quran or whatever, it should not only remain in the book, but it should become part of my life. And also, nididhyasana also means meditation. Daily meditation is very good, where I abide in that knowledge. And when I quieten the mind in meditation, I come closer to the Lord within, to the truth. So learn to meditate, and meditate every day. If you need to learn how to meditate, we do have classes here Thursday night, 6:30 to 7:30. Everybody is welcome. Now, what should I meditate on? Or what is the antarang sadhana? What is the goal of spirituality? What is the essence of the Upanishads? There are, you know, more than the 108 Upanishads, and each one of them is so complicated and so difficult. They say we want the simple definition, simple version of Upanishad. It's too complicated. So the rishis in their wisdom gave us 4 Mahavakyas, 4 beautiful sentences of wisdom. Maha means great, vakyas means sentences, great sentences, which kind of is the essence of the entire spirituality. There's 4, it's called Prajna Nam Brahma, Tattvamasi, Ayam Atma Brahma, and Aham Brahmasmi. And they appear in different Upanishads, in different Vedas. As we know, there are 4 Vedas, Rig Ved, Sam Ved, Yajur Ved, and Atharva Ved. And so these Mahavakyas have been taken from the 4 Vedas. The first one that the teacher will tell us is Prajna Nam Brahma. Consciousness is Brahman. So what does that mean? that there is a consciousness that illumines the whole universe. We agree with that, right? That the plant is alive because of consciousness. Plant is conscious. Even the plant feels pain. Plant can respond to music. Animals are conscious. Birds, fish are conscious. And of course, humans are conscious. So we are all conscious because of the presence of Brahman or God or life principle. So the consciousness that is in all is that one, and that is what we believe, that there is only one God. He takes different forms of Shiva, Ganpati, Mother Saraswati, and Jesus and Buddha and all those, but in reality there is one consciousness appearing as different forms. They are all to be worshipped, all to be loved, but you can have a Ishta Devta, you can have one particular form of God that you love, but you respect all. So that one consciousness is Brahman, and it is the definition of the truth. It is true. There's no arguing with that. Consciousness is Brahman. Brahman is the formless, all-pervading reality. It's different from Brahmaji, who is the creator of the universe. That would distinguish. Brahmaji is the creator, but Brahman is the total consciousness, which is the entire universe, has appeared on that consciousness. That Brahman, the whole universe, is an appearance on that. A wise person sees the whole universe as Brahman. You and I, in our ignorance, we see the differences. And we don't see God. Why? Because we focus on the plant or the lady or the man. So you and I, in our ignorance, don't see Brahman. The wise person sees the whole universe as Brahman. That comes from the Rig Veda. Then the next is the word of advice that is given by the teacher to the student. It's called Tat Tvam Asi, that Tvam Asi, that thou art. This was given by in the Chandogya Upanishad to Shvetaketu by his father. His father was his guru. He says, you are that. You are that consciousness. So we always think of consciousness as something there, out there, somewhere God is out there above the clouds, or maybe in the church. And so we think of him. So he says, no, 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 no. God is not separate from you. You are that. You are that divinity. Not as an arrogance, not that I am God, so I can create the universe. Not that. But what Christ said, the Father in heaven and I are one. So I am that, that thou art. And that's the word of advice that comes from the Chandogya Upanishad, Sam Veda. So do not think of God as being somebody separate from you. He is the eye of your eye. He is the mind of your mind. He is the ear of your ear, as it's said in the Kain Upanishad. They have the Kain Upanishad in the office. And there it's very beautifully explained how God is in every cell of my being, if you wish. You can get that from the office, Kain Upanishad. It explains it very beautifully, the relationship between God and the individual. That thou art Tattvamasi. Then the student starts thinking, okay, I am that. Okay, I am that. How can I be that? This body is perishing. Body cannot be Brahman. My mind is constantly changing. Mind cannot be Brahman. My intellect is confused, sometimes not. Cannot be Brahman. The world of objects, emotions, and thoughts that I see is not Brahman. It is changing. They say Brahman is avyaya, is unchanging. This ego, this perceiver, feeler, and thinker cannot be Brahman. Why? Because that also is changing. My vasanas, my desires cannot be Brahman. Oh, that is also changing. I used to desire, when I was a child, I desired toys, and now I desire cars. So desires are changing. So what is unchanging? That is Brahman. That I am. That Om, that consciousness. I am Atma Brahma. So you think this Atma. Now suddenly from that Brahman, that far away it came to this. This Atma that's within me is Brahman. Okay, so this Atma is Brahman. So now he has a direct experience in his meditation, and that comes from the Mandukya Upanishad of the Atharva Veda. So still he says, this Atma, I am this body, mind, and intellect, and there is this Atma within me that is Brahman. So slowly he has progressed from consciousness to you and then to this. And then ultimately In the depth of his meditation, there is a roar of realization. He roars out loud, loudly, Aham Brahmasmi, I am Brahman. I am not separate from Brahman. I am not. It's the most beautiful. This sequence of four is so powerful. You know, when you apply that, that from far away, the Rishi is bringing you closer and closer and closer and closer till you wake up and you realize that I am that. It comes from the Brihadaranyaka, the Yajurveda. And then what happens? Then once the person says, I am Brahman, then it's not that I am Brahman and these are all my followers. No, they all of them are Brahman. That's what the wise person sees that. The wise person sees Brahman in all of us. But he or she understands that these people have not yet experienced that, what I have. And that's why all these great prophets and saints wrote these scriptures of wisdom. Why? Because they had experienced that. It's like you have seen the sunrise and then, you know, your spouse is still sleeping and you say, wake up, wake up. There's a beautiful sunrise. Look at it. You know, and spouse says, let me sleep. You know, forget it. Sunrise every day. What's special about it? No, no, no. So similarly, the wise person has seen that and out of compassion. And they have already served the purpose of their life. Their life is already fulfilled. They don't need to accomplish anything. They don't need to reach anything. They don't need to learn anything. But they travel through and throughout the country. Swami Chinmayananda from 1950 to 1993, 43 years. He never rested for a single day. He was traveling all over the world, working, you know, 20, 21 hours a day just to spread this message of Vedanta to all of us. So they do it out of their compassion because they have experienced that and they want us to also enjoy that because they see us suffering. Swami Chinmayananda told his guru, he said, I want to go to the masses because they are suffering in ignorance. They have this beautiful knowledge of the Upanishads and the Gita and all, and nobody knows it. In those days, there were not that many translations, not that many commentaries. So he said, it's my goal in life is to spread this knowledge. So the Mahatmas have experienced it. We also need to experience it. So hopefully by applying this different sadhanas, we can also do that. It's very inspiring and it's wonderful. I thank you very much for giving me this opportunity. It's always a blessing. Every day I thank the Lord for, you know, giving me this chance, really. Yes. Yeah, I think what one has to do is look at these and say, how many of them I do every day? How many of them do I do every day? And they have to be done every day, 365 days, no holidays. 365 days a year, 24 hours. Constantly, I should be doing them all and constantly applying. And if you make a checklist, put it on a board and check and say, did I do this today? Did I do this? And then you will find that that's how it helps. Or at the end of the day, you sit down and, you know, recapitulate. Okay, did I do some service? Did I do some sadhana? Did I do some prayer? Did I do some meditation? Did I help somebody? Did I do things to quieten my mind? So when you do all that, then you will notice that your life will change.
It changes and it doesn't change back.
Yes. It's a one-way street.
Right.
That's what Swamiji says. Yeah. So, just share the knowledge with whoever you can. Yeah, that's the best service you can do is sharing knowledge. And whatever your abilities you have, share it. Yes, everyone is imperfect. Yes, they're not realized. Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinaha. Sarve santu niramayah, sarve bhadrani pasyantu, ma kaschit dukha bhag bhavet. Om shanti shanti shanti, Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namah, Hari Om.